Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and today we are going to be talking to Nancy Copel of the South Dakota Historical Society Press about the revised text of Pioneer Girl. But before we get to that, we have a little bit of housekeeping. For our housekeeping, I don't have any programs scheduled in February, but I am going to be doing another episode of the podcast for Laura Ingalls Wilder's birthday. It's going to be at 8 o'clock Central Time. It's going to be a normal one of my podcasts. But the most important thing is this is my call-in episode. So I need people to call in. And I want you to tell me how you got interested in Laura, your favorite Laura activity you ever did, the best piece you have in your Laura collection, the thing that you really want to find and haven't yet in your Laura collection, anything like that. So we're basically celebrating Laura and telling her or telling what she means to you. Now, I would especially appreciate it calls at the beginning of the hour, because what tends to happen is people hesitate and go, oh, I don't know that I want to call. And then we get a bunch of calls at the end. So please call at the beginning and right before that program at 7 o'clock Central Time, the Walnut Grove pageant is going to be having an online thing for Laura too, but it's going to end just in time for you to turn over here. This is Trundlebed Tales, the podcast about Laura Ingalls Wilder, historic foodways, one-room schools, and other social history. This is Sarah Utoff, the host and creator of Trundlebed Tales. Find us all around the web under Trundlebed Tales and on your favorite social media platform. On whatever blog platform you use, please leave feedback, because it helps people to find the show. And I do have the chat room open, so if you're logged into Blog Talk Radio, you can chat while the show is live. You can also be a part of the show by calling in. You can call in at 714-242-5253. That's 714-242-5253, or toll free 1-877-633-9389. That's toll free 1-877-633-9389. And that, I think, is the end of our housekeeping today. And with that, we are going to bring on Nancy. Nancy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, those of you who have caught past episodes, we have had Nancy on before, but I'm very glad to have her this time because she's got a brand new project out, the revised text of Pioneer Girl. And I have it sitting right here beside me in case we have to check something out. And let's just start with Nancy. For people who haven't heard you on here before, let's tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. My name is Nancy Tysted Copel. And I'm just like Laura Ingalls Wilder, I've used all three of my names since I began working professionally in the 1970s. I'm proud of my Norwegian family heritage, and so that's a way of saying it. My husband is the Kopel, he's the Czech, I'm the Norwegian. So that's a simple explanation of my name. I began working with the South Dakota Historical Society back in 1979. So it's been a long time that I've been associated with this sort of thing. I'm not sure if that you want. Oh, you wanted me to tell the story of how one of the first things that led me down the Laura Ingalls Wilder path was that I started working for the State Historical Society at the old memorial building in Pierre in 1979, as I said. I had become friends with Bill Anderson, and he kept telling me that there were these missing charcoal portraits of Ma and Pa that those that given Laura had bequeathed them to the society at her death, and nobody seemed to know where they were. And if you've ever been in the old memorial building when it was a museum, you might understand how that might happen. It was never designed as a museum. It was never designed as an archive. It was designed as a memorial to World War I soldiers. So it was this cavernous place with statues and not really set up to very unlike the modern archives that the state now has. But in any case, I decided that they had to be there somewhere, and so I went on a search. And they were indeed in a cabinet that was like a map cabinet. It was a big cabinet because these are big portraits. I think they're at least 11 by 17. And so I found them in there completely unidentified. They had no names attached to them. But, of course, through my research, I recognized immediately who they were. So that's my first Wilder story.
And I just love it because you recognize them. There was no label. It must have fallen off sometime over the years. And just seeing them, you go, oh, it's Ma and Pa. And I just think that is so great.
I hope
if I saw them out of context, I'd go, oh, it's Ma and Pa, because I just think that is so cool.
Yeah, well, it was cool. It was pretty exciting. There they were. And yes, you know, in those days, they used those stick'em labels, and that when they dried up, they fell off. So a lot of the photographs in that thing were unidentified, in that drawer were unidentified, but none of them were quite so identifiable as the Ingalls family.
Well, I just love that story. Thank you for telling it.
You're welcome.
Okay, so if you are somebody who does not know what Pioneer Girl is, which is an important thing to know if you're going to be researching Laura, or if you are just going to be looking for books to add to your Laura collection, it's important to know what is Pioneer Girl. So, Nancy, what is Pioneer Girl?
Well, Pioneer Girl is many things, it turns out, but what it is most fundamentally is Laura's autobiography, which she wrote in 1929-1930. It exists in many forms. There is the original handwritten manuscript that she wrote in 1930. She wrote it into lined schoolgirl tablets in pencil, and it has languished in archives for 4 years. She produced this manuscript to give to her daughter Rose Wilder Lane, who was looking for a marketable the product to sell to the newspaper serials in 1931. And so what happened next was Rose Wilder Lane took the manuscript from her mother and began to Lane edited when she typed. She changed things. She improved the grammar. She corrected the spelling. She would move things around a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit. And she changed the manuscript as she worked with it. And ultimately, Rose created three typescripts of Pioneer Girl. So what you have with Pioneer Girl is you have first the handwritten autobiography in the tablet, and then you have these three revised versions of it that are named for Lane's agent. So they're, in other words, they're the Brandt manuscript after her agent, Carl Brandt. And then there's the Brandt revised manuscript, and then there's the Bly manuscript after Lane's final agent, who was George C. Bly.
Yes, and the reason Rose had two agents, because she decided one wasn't doing enough selling for her, so that's when she switched over to the new guy. And I have to say, Rose has a tendency to over-edit things, but I would say these were almost under-edited, you know, if they're looking on making marketable product.
Yes, indeed. They certainly were. And they're... You know, in Pioneer Girl, the revised text, I speculate about why that might have happened. Why were they under-edited? And as I say in that book, there are a number of reasons. Among other things, Lane was in a hurry. She needed money, and she wanted to get this off her plate and on to other things. She edited the first one in just a matter of days and sent it off to her agent and, you know, and hoped for the best, I guess you'd say. But there were other factors as well. I don't think Lane was not feeling particularly well at that time. She was struggling to write her own material. She just couldn't come up with sellable manuscripts. So I think it was hard for her to really concentrate on the editing in the way that she should have. I think there was probably a little piece of Lane that thought, oh my goodness, what wonderful material there is here, and my mother's not doing anything with it, so to speak. And I think there might have been, you know, Lane's and Wilder's relationship was fraught in many ways, and so she may just not have been interested subconsciously or unconsciously, just may not have been interested in improving her mother's work as much as it needed to be. Or, you know,
it is a lot of work to take somebody's handwritten manuscript and type it. I used to do that for my grandmother's stuff, just for news stories that she used to write. And oh my gosh, trying to just get it in the right format and sort of the leaves at the top and the thing at the bottom, it is an awful lot of work. I'm impressed she could do even as much as she did in a couple of days. It always took me all night.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, in some ways, the best way to think about Lane is that her typewriter was really an extension of her hand. She used it all the time, and she had been using it all the time since she began writing for the San Francisco Bulletin back in 1915. So she was adept at using the typewriter. She had systems that she used and that worked well, but you're absolutely right. She's got this huge manuscript that she has to reorganize as she's typing. No computers in those days to help her move stuff around. She had to do it on her own. physically.
The best part of computers, really, that you can just move things on. So I will have to say, in the defense of typewriters, if you are revising something on a typewriter, you at least have to read every single word, and it's easy to gloss over stuff as you're moving it around. So that is, I think, the advantage of the typewriter.
Right.
Okay, well, how did the press get involved with, I have one more question before that. Had the Pioneer Girl been available in any way before the press printed it?
It was available in manuscript. You could get it get the revised text from the Hoover Library simply as a manuscript. And the original manuscript was available on microfilm through the universities in Missouri. I'm not sure if it was Missouri State or the University of Missouri right now, but they were available to the Sirius Scholar, yes.
Yeah, I think it's the one in Columbia.
It is the one.
Yeah. So
that's correct. But at the moment, I can't keep South Dakota State and the University of South Dakota straight without quite a bit of thinking. So.
Well, I'll tell you, Iowa used to be Iowa State University and the State University of Iowa. They ended up changing it. You can remember that.
I know. It confused us poor mortals.
Yeah. So how did the press get involved with Pioneer Girl in the first place?
Well, you know, that was a slow and somewhat gradual process. You know, started editing the journal in the South Dakota History Magazine in 1979. And as I said, I met and published Bill Anderson's master's thesis on Laura Ingalls Wilder. Through him, I'm sure we published the archivist report, first report of the collection, I think in 1984 it was, of the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library collection in 1984. John Miller, one of Wilder's early biographers, published articles about Laura with us. So the staff and I were well aware of Laura Wilder. And in 2006, established a small biography series. And we commissioned three manuscripts, a biography of Seth Bullock, a biography of Wilder Hickok's Calamity Jane, and a biography of Laura Ingalls Wilder as, you know, key and well-known South Dakotans. And the first one that came in happened to be Pamela Smith Hill's book on Laura Ingalls Wilder. So we published that in 2007, and it was, you know, it was an instant hit. It rang all the right bells. It was small, pocket-sized. It was very affordable, and it was a well-told story. So that started us firmly on the path Pioneer Girl. And Pioneer Girl, of course, is just one of those fundamental sources that you have to know and examine in studying Laura Ingalls Wilder. So as that book came out and was successful, Pam Hill and I would talk, and she would say, you know, we really, really need to do something about Pioneer Girl because it needs to be out there. And so as a result of that, in 2009, I started negotiating with the Little House Heritage Trust to see if we could get the rights to publish Pioneer Girl. And that took a good year to work through all of the issues involved with that. And in 2010, we earned the right, and then we just hunkered down and got to work. Because we had promoted it as a study, as a literary manuscript. It was the thing, you know, we would annotate it, we would compare it, we would treat it like what it was, which is the seminal document, the seed of all the stories of Laura Ingalls Wilder's career. So that's what we started to do. We put together go ahead.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I put together a research team at the South Dakota Historical Society Press, and we started doing the research in archives, in the census, in land records, in all of those places, and especially in the period newspapers that allowed us to create all the wonderful annotations that appear in the first book, which is Pioneer Girl, the Annotated Autobiography.
What did the original published version look like? So not these three follow-ups, but the original Pioneer Girl.
Well, it looks a lot like the first one. In fact, one of the reviewers said it had the dimensions of a pizza box. It's a big oversized book. It's 8.5. I'm not sure now that I say that exactly what size it is. The size of a pizza box. It's kind of a square, tall, oversized book. It's over 400 pages long. It's done so that Laura Ingalls Wilder's text runs down the middle of the page and the annotations run down the sides of the page, so that you can read them simultaneously, side by side. The thing about it is that they're silver onto the next page, and so then you'll have just pages of notes with Laura's text picking up later.
So how did you decide to use that format when you were just, handed what was basically, TypeScript, like any paper you'd print out?
Well, I think as you edit and work with the book, you start to, at least, I've been an editor since 1979, as I said. So you start, as you work with tech, to get a picture of the book in your head. You start to understand how it got built together. Like, I'm working on the fourth book, and that I have a clear vision of what that's going to look like when it's done. With the very first book, with Pioneer Girl, the Annotated Autobiography, we all these books have been designed by the same designer, but the designer, who's Rich Hindle, pretty much envisioned how this book, the actual placement of things for this book, and what notation and what text, what font, and what point size, and all the things that would help differentiate what different parts of the book look like, so that you can tell when you're dealing with annotations and when you're dealing with text. So we had a designer, we had a typesetting firm that helped us make sure it all turned out properly. We had that book is just loaded as well with photographs, that we spent years collecting and assembling. It really, really takes a team to design a book. You may have a vision for it, but to get it all to go together, you need designers, setters, production people. And so we were fortunate in having done some fundraising that allowed us to be able to afford all those.
And the the cover art for all four books, well, I guess all three you've done so far, was that Judy Thompson?
Yes, it was Judy Thompson. We started looking for an artist kind of breathe life in Prairie Story early on. Every time me and my staff and I traveled, we would be sure to check out the local galleries, art galleries, to see who was working in a medium and with colors that we thought would bring the story to life. And we were fortunate enough to find Judy Thompson, who's from Orange City, Iowa, and she had done a series of watercolor paintings that she called the Homestead series. And I looked at that series and I thought, it's almost. But she said it in the summer, and it was tough, very sure I thought it would work. But then we were in an art gallery in the fall, she had a picture there of a Fanto frame, and the palette was just gorgeous. The colors were rich and jewel-like, and I thought, okay, that's it. She's the one. So I called her the next day, and then she started working with the covers. And we did them all at that time. She did Pioneer Girl first, but then they moved through the season. Pioneer Girl is spring, Pioneer Girl Perspective is summer, Revised Text is fall, and the final one will be winter. So they are a planned thing as well.
Can you buy prints of them if you really fall in love with the covers?
You can buy prints of the first one, but our nonprofit foundation, the South Dakota, South Dakota Historical Society Foundation, did art prints of them. So they are available through the foundation. Now we haven't that didn't prove to be terribly successful, so we really haven't done prints of the rest of them.
So how are sales going for Pioneer Girl to right now? Is it still selling?
Yes, absolutely, it is. The PBS film of Laura Ingalls Wilder last year really kind of beefed up the profile of the book, and so it's been selling briskly since that film came out. So it's now in about its 15th or 16th printing. I think it's actually between those two right now. I mean, it's and there's over 190,000 of them in print. And
wow.
That's a Pioneer Girl. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Pretty amazing.
Well, yeah, we spent about the first half of the program talking about Pioneer Girl, because I really think you need to know what Pioneer Girl is for this book to make any sense whatsoever. But let's move on now to your trilogy set that you're working on now. What is it?
Well, and when we finished Pioneer Girl in 2014, or actually before that, 2013, as we were winding up the Pioneer Girl, the first Pioneer Girl book, the annotated autobiography, it was clear that while it answered a lot of questions about Laura's working, Wilder's working method, and where the book was. It was really clear that Pioneer Girl is a long way from the book themselves. There's a lot of learning that's going to take place. Laura's going to learn how to craft a novel, and Lane is going to help her do that. And so we decided that if we were really going to do a comprehensive edition of Pioneer Girl, as we promised in our literature, that we were going to have to look at the revised text as well, and then to look at the manuscripts that lead directly from Pioneer Girl into Little House in the Big Woods, so that we could see all of the early process in Wilder's career. That's what we started to do. And so the three, what you're calling the trilogy, three are those three books: Pioneer Girl, the Annotated Autobiography, which is Laura's handwritten autobiography. As Hill says, it's as close as we can get to the author's words in her own voice. The second book is then Laura Ingalls Wilder, Pioneer Girl, revised text, which looks at what Lane did when she started to edit them. And it not only looks at what Lane did, but it looks at the ways in which Wilder contributed to the editing process. And so you see Lane working through these three manuscripts. And then the third volume will be Pioneer Girl, The Path into Fiction. And what that is an examination of all the surviving manuscripts of Little House in the Big Woods and how they come directly out of Pioneer Girl, when Lane patched together what she called a picture book of the Wisconsin chapter of the Brant and By text. And so that's what you have, is the progression through the original editing of the memoir into when Lane steps onto the path and begins to create fiction from the memoir.
Yeah, when Girl was a little girl, it's such an odd book. I don't know what Lane was thinking. She did pull out a lot of good stories, but the length of it, nobody publishes books of that length. And she should have been good enough in the publishing industry to know that. I just find it odd. But that sounds like an exciting book too.
Yeah, actually, it's a very interesting book.
So the first one in this series was Pioneer Girl Perspective. And if people are wanting to, you know, get all three, what's that one?
The first, there's actually four books, and the Pioneer Girl Perspectives came out in 2017, and that's a book of essays about Wilder and her writing career and about Lane. And what that is after the Annotated Autobiography came out in 2014, there were just, it seemed to me that clearly the Pioneer Girl was adding something to the body of Wilder scholarship and Wilder studies. So I decided that I would ask the top as many of the top scholars in Pioneer Girl, in Wilder study, to reflect on what Pioneer Girl brought to the table in Wilder scholarship. And that was kind of the genesis or the kernel of what brought that book into being. And also the fact that there just were still a lot of unanswered questions, in my mind at least. And so put together, it's 10 essays, and from by people like Bill Anderson, Carolyn Frazier, Anne Romine, Betsy Jameson, and just a number of people that have worked on Wilder through the years. It also contains an interview of Noel Silverman, who has been the counsel for the trust, the House Heritage Trust, for many years. So that's a book of scholarship, of essays about Wilder. It's not by Wilder, and that's what makes it different.
And it's got, there was a conference held in its name, which was great. In my book, I have everybody's signature except Laura's. So that is one of my really favorite pieces in my collection. I just think that's great.
Yeah, we brought everybody together, everybody who had contributed except Wilder, to a conference in Sioux Falls, South Dakota in 2017. And it was a well-attended conference, and everybody just did a terrific job exploring Wilder for a couple of days.
You should do another one. Getting back to the revised text, one of the things I have gotten asked online is what's different about this book than the original Pioneer Girl? Why would somebody want to have both the original one you put out and this book?
Well, I think there are a couple of reasons. For comparison, obviously, as I said earlier, Pioneer Girl, Laura's original handwritten manuscript is a very long way from the book. She would have to mature, and she would need guiding to get from there to the novel that came from it. And so this is essentially the first step on that path. So it's so that you can compare. It's so that you can begin to understand the complexity of novel writing, the complexity of the relationship between Wilder and the daughter, the complexity of the relationship between writer and editor, and that's its purpose. Depends on the reader and how interested they are in the process. The reader needs to bring something to that too. They have to be interested in how Pioneer Girl transitions from a memoir by a farm journalist into a very successful series of novels, which for young people. That's the purposes.
So it would sort of be like the original Pioneer Girl text you published is set up to be the history of Wilder, and this book is set up to be the history of the manuscript and the writing process. Is that right?
That's right. And it's actually a story of two women. It's not just the story of Wilder, the story of Wilder as the writer, and Rose Wilder Lane as the editor.
So who do you see as the audience for this book?
Well, as I said, I see the audience as scholars. It's a resource. It's about Wilder that people know is that she and her daughter left an enormous paper trail. There are a lot of materials for the scholar to use. These two books, both the first one and this one, kind of sift through that for the common man, I suppose, and help them see where things happened that made a difference in the writing of the book. They become source books, both of them. We've tried very hard to keep Asianol, to keep them acceptable to the lay reader who is very interested in the material, but they are for those who have an interest not only in the author and not only in her characters, but in the process that led from the creation of the character.
So who contributed to it? This must have been a huge project.
It has been a huge project. The people who contributed to this were the Pioneer Girl Project editors, and those were people who were on staff with the press, who did the research, who did the writing, who did the polishing and cleaning up. I would also say that some of the contributors were actually the authors that contributed essays to Pioneer Girl Perspectives. They brought new insights into the material, and those insights are used in Pioneer Girl, the revised text.
Well, it's a very interesting thing. I also have people ask me sometimes online, or sometimes even when I do one of my presentations, about if Pioneer Girl would be okay for their kids to read. And I usually try and move them to Laura Ingalls Wilder by Bill Anderson as a starting place, that if they haven't read that yet, they'd really want to do that before Pioneer Girl. But do you think that there is that it would be okay for Laura people who are young to read the book if they wanted to?
I think it would. You know, it's going to take a young person who's deeply interested in Wilder and in history, because it is essentially, both of them are essentially history grounded in history. In other words, you're going to learn a lot about the times in which Laura lived and the times in which she wrote, because both those times are important to understanding the material. So it's history. I would say that for, you know, very young readers, no, it's not. It's just they're going to become frustrated with it. But for your older readers that are curious, there's just a wealth of material there for them to see.
What did you learn most by writing this book or at doing the editing process for it?
Oh, man. Now, that question I didn't expect. What did I learn? I learned so much with each book. And I learned so much, I guess, about the craft of editing, which is really, to me, it's been my life career, and so I find that fascinating. I find the arguments the two women had about how to present things to readers is just very fascinating. So I find every time I sit down to start to work with it, I'm going to discover some new thing, some new material. I mean, there's so much manuscript material. There's so much. I've been reading the San Francisco Bulletin lately, where both Wilder and Lane, in a sense, started their, especially Lane, but Wilder, too, to a certain extent, started their public careers or their careers outside of the book. And so it's just fascinating. And just looking, I'm a historian at heart, so just looking at how things have changed from 1915 to 1930 when things were, when the both Wilder and Lane were writing and working on this material, I just find it all fascinating. So, you know, the thing, yeah. I don't know what else to say. I guess I just find it fascinating.
Well, let's move ahead just for a little bit about the third book in the series. Now, you'd said it was going to be the manuscripts heading towards Little House in the Big Woods. What ones do you have that will be included?
There are four main manuscripts. The first one is Juvenile Pioneer Girl, which we talked about in both of the first two books. You find it as a facsimile of Pioneer Girl, the annotated autobiography. So that's the first one. The second one is When Grandma Was a Little Girl, which is the cleaned up version that was submitted to the publisher. The fourth one is a unedited but relatively complete rough draft of the entire book. That's the third one. And the fourth one is a partial draft of the book. And then there are a number of fragments. There's some additional pieces that are inserted within the partial draft that will occur in the book, occur in Wilder's original full draft.
Is it going to be organized in the same format as this one, so they're side by side to compare?
Yes, some of them will. They won't all, you know, it's going to be, I think, organized in two parts. So first we'll look at what Lane did, and that's the two short manuscripts that were submitted, the rough draft and then the short manuscript that was submitted to the publisher. So we're going to look at those first side by side. And then Wilder essentially takes that clean copy, which the publisher returns to her, and begins to cut and paste it into a longer handwritten manuscript. And so that's the next step. Although, and as I said, the partial rough draft is only for the latter half of the book. And it includes a piece that Lane will shift to the front of the book. So it's going to be a tricky layout again. And I'm just not sure until the designer and typesetter get their hands on it. I'm not just sure how it'll look.
So,
but it will be designed for comparison, yeah.
So there was kind of a big gap between when the Perspectives book came out and when this one came out. Is this next book going to be coming out quicker, or do we have to snuggle up for another long wait?
Well, my profound hope is that, yes, it will be out quicker. The gap between the first one, Pioneer Girl Perspectives, actually is in that gap. But at that time, I was working as the director of the press. I was wearing a lot of hats. Since that time, I've retired from the directorship of the press, and I am heading the Pioneer Girl Project and concentrating on getting these books finished. So the next one, I am guessing, will be out within a year or a year and a half.
Yay!
Yay!
So when those three books come
out, do you think that's going to be the end of the Pioneer Girl Project? Or do you, now you've got sort of a platform established, do you see it spreading out to other things?
You know, I'm sure it will not be the end of the project. Just what directions the project will take after that, I'm not sure. One of the thoughts is to move on to the next book and explore the manuscript that created Farmer Boy, and then, you know, perhaps do a textual study of each of the books in turn. That's one thought. I don't know exactly how much interest, I don't know exactly how much interest there will be out there in that sort of thing. We're looking at other manuscripts related to Wilder that you know, may or may not come to fruition. I think the project will go on. I think there will be more. I just, at this point in time, can't tell you what it will be.
So, are you going to be heading it up then?
Well, I'm going to head it up for the next couple of years. But after that, probably not. So there will be other thoughts about where it should go. So that's all I can say. You know, I am thinking that, as I said, I'm thinking for the next 2 years, and beyond that, I'm not sure.
Okay. So let's kind of talk just a little bit about the press and the other kind of books they do, because that was one of the reasons there was, for those of you who might not remember, there was a huge demand for Pioneer Girl when it first came out. And for various reasons, the supply was pretty limited there right at the beginning. And part of the reason for that is because the press is a college academic kind of press, and it tends to have kind of small runs. But you have done some really great books that aren't Laura-based. Do you have a couple of those that are your favorites or that people might want to be sure to check out or get a copy of those too?
Well, you know, the South Dakota Biography series that includes the Laura Ingalls Wilder biography is just a good little series that deals with people that are known beyond the borders of South Dakota. So it's, as I said, inexpensive. I think the books are $14.95 right now. They're small paperback, and they just, that's a good series. We've done a number of children's books that I think people should take a look at. The most recent one was called, it's about Charlie Russell and the Gnomes of Bullhead Lodge. And it's just a beautiful story about Charlie Russell and his the leaf in gnome and creating them and their stories out of nature, and it's just a sweet little book. It's illustrated by Jean Bowman, and on this fall, which will be out next year, are well worth taking a look at. One of them is called American Ace. Joe Foss, a fighter pilot, and it's about Joe Foss, who was the number one American ace during World War II. And it's a graphic biography, so it's like a big comic book, and that I think is going to be fun. And then the other book is called A Place for Harvest, The Story of Kenny Higashi. And it's written by Lauren Harris and illustrated by Felicia Hoshino. And it's the story of a Japanese family in Spearfish, South Dakota, who lived there. Their children were born and raised there. And what happened to them during World War II. And what happened was the son was conscripted more or less into an all-Japanese American unit that fought in the war. So it's just a beautiful book of a little-known part of the Japanese American story. So I'd look those up. I think they're both going to be excellent.
Well, it sounds like they are. And I will tell everybody that your picture books just are gorgeous. I got some for my niece and nephew when they were picture book age. And I especially like the L. Frank Baum children's story about the striped gopher. And if you don't know, L. Frank Baum is the guy who created The Wizard of Oz and wrote 14 books in that series. And I could talk a lot about him, but I just think it's great that this other kid's book he did has been resurrected and brought out in the form of a modern illustrated book.
We did two of his. What they were magazine stories. They were stories that appeared in the Delineator at the turn of the century, and they were designed to be read to children by mothers who used the magazine. And so we took two of those and created picture books, and we took three additional stories by other authors. And some of those have been, some of them are still in print. The two based on American Indian stories, The Dance and the Buffalo Soul, and I can't remember the name, but the raccoon, a story about a raccoon. Those two have been very popular and are still in print.
Well, I really love those. Now, you might have heard the clock. I'm not sure how well the microphone picks it up over on. So that's sort of telling us we're about out of time. But if people wanted to get the revised textbooks or the original Pioneer Girl or any of the books the press puts out, where can they find them?
They can find them at SDHSPress, all one word, .com. And they can also follow our blog at pioneergirlproject.org, which talks about what we're researching at various times, announces when the books are available, and the Wilder books can be bought through that site as well.
And the Laura ones only can also be purchased at the Laura Ingalls Wilder home site, though I'm sure you appreciate it when they use the South Dakota ones and when they buy it straight from the press. But I think they're great books, and I'm so glad that you put this process together and it's a lovely series.
Yeah, I would just say that the home site, all of them have been great partners with the press in making the book available to those who are interested.
And I just want to add that I appreciate you telling me your picture story again, because that is my favorite home site story. I love it. It's so great.
Well, thank you.
And I will put the links to the blog and the link to the site in the description and the show notes of this episode. So, Nancy, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. I think we had a great episode today. And remember to brighten the corner where you are. And
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.